Mr. Webb, reel two.
But there was a bit more to it than that, wasn't there?
Well, yes, we just stripped the guns down and cleaned them, and we had to go on the range and fire them. We had a period of firing. And,
but the Lewis gun personnel worked as a team, didn't they?
Yes.
Well, how many were in the team, and what jobs? Well, what was the jobs of each member?
There were six, and I think it was six altogether. That means to say that was the number one, two, three, four, five, six on the guns. And the number one was the man in charge. And he, helped fire the gun with his number two. His number two just laid alongside of him. Your gun was put up on a tripod, which of course they had tripods, you see. And then they used to fire the gun when the magazine was empty, because it was a round rotary magazine, you see, and as you fired, the thing went round and delivered another cartridge ready for the rod to push it in the barrel.
Yes.
Well, then the number two, he would be alongside with another magazine. He'd take the magazine off, the old magazine that was used, and on with another one and vice versa, right through the, as long as you want. But you see, a Lewis gun was a gun that couldn't be fired, we'll say, like the Maxim guns, the big guns, yes, with those water-cooled.
Yes.
These were air-cooled.
Yes. Carry on with, you've got to one and two. Now, what about all the others?
Well, number three, you see, he would be, three, four, five, and six would attend to any form of the empty magazines that was taken off, that was fired. They would take them and they would reload with ammunition. You see, that was their job. Well, then, another thing was, you see, when you went in the trenches, we used to have the limbers bringing up the guns as far as they could, you know, in reason they had been shelled, with the mules and the limbers, the guns, you know, the limber guns. Well, it's really a carriage to carry all the equipment. And they come up to a centre, you see. And from there, you take your guns to go off into the trenches, you see, with them. Well, these men used to carry what they call panniers. Do you know what I mean by panniers?
Sort of a haversack.
Yes, it's two round discs like that, and they were filled up with the magazines. And that used to be the job, you see, that they had, you had the other men. Number one carried the gun. Number two assisted him. Number three, four, five, and six carried the panniers full of ammunition, you see, into the position of the front fire step, you see.
If three and four's job were reloading the drums, what did five and six do?
Well, they would do similar, because, you see, these drums were done by, you had an anvil you put down into the drum and turn it round and drop in a cartridge in each one, you see. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it was such a, well, it, I don't say it would be a long job, but it's a thing that if you were firing, and like we were on the retreat, somebody have got to load the panniers, you see.
That's fine.
Magazines.
Yeah, that's perfectly clear. Good. Right. Well, anything else you ought to tell me about your machine gun training, or has that covered it?
Yes, I think that's pretty well covered. The only thing was, if you see, the machine gun was used more or less in bursts. I mean, if you fired at a set of men that's coming towards you, the first thing they do is to drop. Well, it's no good to fire after they're dropped, because, you see, you're wasting ammunition and no advantage. But the idea of firing in bursts was because, you see, if the gun got too hot, it would seize. Well, then you had the uncomfortable job of probably the enemy advancing on you, and, you got to know exactly what you got to do, or a stoppage. You get two cartridges rammed up into one another, you see. Mm-hmm. Well, then you had to know whether it was number one, two, and three stoppage, and you just watch the position of the cock and handle, and you'd know then, as you've been trained, what you had to do. Of course, it was a bit trying sometimes when the enemy was advancing onto you, and you got a little bit flummoxed with knowing exactly what you had to do. Well, we always did, because, as I say, we knew the job, you see.
All right. Anything about the machine gun cells?
No, I don't think there is. It's just a matter, it was, when I went out first, it was about
We'll hold on about
that. Oh, yeah.
That. We've got a long way to go yet.
Hmm?
Okay, so you were trained as a machine gunner.
Yes.
What about the other infantry training at Bovington that you received? What were the most important parts of it?
Well, I had musketry. That's with a rifle, of course. I mean, I had to go through that, whatever happened, whether it was a signaler or not. You had to go through all this training, you see. And we used to carry on, just the same with a rifle. They used to tell us it was our best friend. We used to think it's our worst enemy, because, as regards the, carrying it about. But anyway, we used to have to do just the same, strip it down, know exactly what we had to do to the rifle, you see, to get it to work, and kept it clean. And then we fire after you got a certain amount of... tuition on it, you simply went and onto the range.
Yes.
And they'd give you live ball ammunition, you see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there was shooting. What were the other most important parts of the infantry training?
The next one would be bayonet fighting.
How was that organised?
That was carried out by squads of men under their instructor. It was took to these, sort of gallows it was. It was... And bags of straw was hung down. Bags stuffed with straw was hung down like on two bits of rope. And they used to get these men, you see, to go forward. And they had the different methods of attacking.
What were they?
For bayoneting. Well, you had... there was one method where you drove the bayonet into the bag... And then you withdrew it like that, and of course up again for the next man that was coming behind him. It was a matter of, and then they had what they call, I think it was more like a little prod, where they just prod a man up under his chin, and that was the defense of the bayoneting. You had another chance, you see, with a bayonet. Of course, a bayonet was already, a formidable weapon, I always thought. I didn't like that. But still, we went through the training.
Were there any other strokes with the bayonet apart from the ones you've described?
No, nothing that I can remember, not more than, as I say, it was just a matter they used to get you to go forward and shout, make all the noise you could, because they used to say, the more noise you make, it'll stick the fear of God up the Germans and all that sort of thing, you know?
Uh-huh. Okay. So there's bayonet fighting, that was an important part. What are their main parts, the parts of the infantry training that you've found to be most useful?
Well, I don't know whether...
Bombing, do you have any bombing training?
Oh yes, bombing, yes. Oh, yes, we had bombing to do. We had the Mills bomb. And
in 1915?
Pardon?
In 1915?
No, 1916. This was, it would be no, because you see, at the end of 1915, I joined up. By the time I got into the training area, it was pretty well 1916, wasn't it? The beginning of 1916.
Okay.
Then you see, we did bombing, and then you did the same thing exactly. You simply just sat down to the lecture and sorted over all the parts of a bomb. Which was, not live, of course, but there was the spring where you had to keep it down. They used to pull the spring down and with a little ring in it, you see. And you pulled the ring out and let go of the handle like that, which used to fly out, and let down the trigger onto this detonator.
Yes.
And it exploded. You kept it for about a couple of seconds, no longer, because if you did, it'd explode in your hands. And it has been known that the Germans used to throw them back where somebody threw them before their time.
Yes. How much of the training at Bovington was associated with trench warfare as such. I mean, you've already mentioned you had these exercises on your miniature Somme. I wondered if you had any training in trench construction, trench repairs, sandbagging, wiring.
Oh, yes, yes, all that went through. I mean, that was the general routine. You had sandbag training, where you had to pack your sandbags up to make your trench, where they used to blow a hole in your trench, and you used to have to get the sandbags and fill them up and plant them down like you do bricks, you know, centre them, each one. And, another thing, revetting. They used to have what they call revetting on the trenches. That was that steel sort of wire. You've seen it, I expect, what they use for on buildings. It's a form of pressed steel, I should say, and it's all little tiny sections where you can see through, you see, and it was in a sheet. Well, we used to put that up against the trench and peg it in, you see, and that kept all the dirt from falling in, or the mud, because I mean the mud was colossal.
And this was brought into your training as well, was it?
All that, oh yes, went through all that. The same with, as I say, about the bombing, you see, we used
to... What about wiring? Did you have training in there?
Yes.
Well, tell me about that. What do you remember about how you were taught to use wire?
Well, you see, the wiring, it was barbed wire, of course, and it was we used to use these screw-in... I don't know if you've ever seen them. It's got a great big screw on it. You've got... started screwing it like a... like a corkscrew. It was a large corkscrew. Mm. And then it had loops on the top, you see, where you used to thread your wire through and then pull it tight and pull it down to the ground and make a proper defence. And they used to make it sloping like that, higher towards the enemy in the front of your trench. And so that if he attacked you, he couldn't get up so well over it as he could if it was down the other way. Of course, they used to blow the wire all up by artillery, you see.
Yes. As a result of your training at Bovington, were there any aspects of trench warfare which, when you met them for real in France, you felt you hadn't been taught about?
No. The only thing that, in that respect, would have been the gas. We were not very well versed in the idea of tackling gas. When I went to France, they had the gas masks were a flannel bag. And just two round highlight holes, sort of for the goggles, that's the word. And you had a flange that you held onto like that with your teeth, and a pinch like a closed peg on your nose. This is in a gas attack I'm talking about now. And you used to have to put that on and, well, just use it until the gas attack was gone. Well, you see, that was only just phosgene and tear gas and all like that. Well, of course, we hadn't got to the stage where when he started using that mustard gas. Because that was a terrible thing.
I see. Fine.
But we used to learn. We used to use. We used to get to know. Like in gas, we was always go through the gas chamber and all like that before we went to.
What was that
in
like?
Action.
What was the chamber like?
The chamber was underground.
Sorry.
Underground. It was a long trench, and it was zigzagged. You see, so that it would hamper you if you got the wind up, we'll say, and you would rush through if it was a straight trench and come out the other end, and your knowledge of gas warfare wouldn't be very much. But they made it more awkward. They make it just dark, just underground, covered over at the top. You went down to the curtain, a great curtain was hung down outside, and you was put down into this gas chamber, and you had to put your gas mask on. They just shouted gas. They saw how you acted towards it. You put your flannel bag on and go down through this gas chamber and come out the other end. You had to forage around. You couldn't get... That's what it done to hamper you, you see. You had to stop there quite long enough that... say if you went through quick, you wouldn't know a lot about it. But they did it just to Empress, you see, made the zigzags in the trench. Because you might go that way, dark, you see, and it might be this way. And then you think, oh, I don't know. Anyway, we got like that when we came out the other end, you see, we were, well, as I say, you could smell this gas after you took your mask off, and you had to be very careful with it because it was a very choking sensation.